Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Welcome to Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Mobrig, and today we wrap up our look at the candidates for the 7th Congressional District with Republican Dan Mielke here in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Wausau for the next hour. 2 weeks ago, we heard from Ashland County District Attorney Sean Duffy, whom Mr. Mielke faces in a Republican primary contest next year. The week before, we featured the comments of longtime incumbent Democrat Dave Obey, now serving his 40th year in Congress as the powerful chair of the House Appropriations Committee. Dan Mielke was defeated by Mr. Obey last November in his first attempt. He is hoping for a chance at a rematch. Dan Mielke is not, as he will tell you, a professional politician or office holder. He is an organic farmer from the Rudolph area in Portage County. He's been active in a series of recent protests held against the policies of the Obama administration, and he'll be part of a Tea Party protest scheduled in downtown Wausau this weekend. As always, we're opening the phone lines to you, our listeners. Do you think Dan Mielke deserves another shot against Congressman Obey? Or do you prefer fellow Republican Sean Duffy? In the general election, will you vote for one of them, or will you vote to return Dave Obey for yet another term? And why will you do that? What do you think of the recent Tea Party protests and those contentious town hall meetings on health care? Give us a call. Our lines are open at 261-6371 if you're in the Wausau area. That's 261-6371 or toll-free 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Dan, good to see you again.
Good to see you, too.
Now, you announced you were running again just weeks after you were defeated in the last election. Why do you think the results are going to be different this time?
Well, actually, Glenn, Dave Obey's been around a long time, and it's been very difficult for anybody to really do a good job at running after him. The last election, I pulled one of the highest vote counts of any candidate that has ever run against Dave Obey in 40 years, and there's been a lot of candidates. I actually beat the last record by 33,000 votes. I guess it's about the same thing, though. A lot of charges.
A high-energy campaign.
Yes, it definitely is. And also, I pulled the second highest percentage, and I pulled that in a year when normal Republicans weren't doing so well. And the last highest was during the Contract with America when Republicans were in the stronghold. So that aspect right there gave me the idea that I needed to put one more year into this. I built a foundation. People are starting to know who I am, and maybe I can bring it home this year.
Why do you think it's so important for you to run again against him?
Well, I'm passionate about the views that I hold and the issues that I believe in. I'm worried about the freedoms of this nation. I think we're losing touch with the fundamental principles that both sides of the aisle have fought for so many years is going out the window. They're focusing so hard on these issues that they're forgetting those fundamental principles that are set up in our Constitution, granting us our freedoms and our rights, and those are going out the window, and I'm concerned about it.
We'll explore some of the specific implications of what you just said later in the show. But I want to turn to the primary contest you're going to face against Ashland County District Attorney Sean Duffy. Why should voters choose you and not him?
I'd like to say it's because I'm better looking, but I don't think that's going to be the case. We're two different candidates. Sean is more of the established, typical type of candidate politician that you're used to. He's been a district attorney in an elected position for four terms in the Ashland area. He's never had an opponent, but he's been there for four terms. He's used to the system. And for him, it's more of a political system. For me, it's a passion to go there to try to make changes. As I mentioned to you earlier, I don't want to be there if people don't want someone with my views there. I'm not just going to get a job. I'm going because I want to bring those principles there, and that's why I'm fighting.
Do you feel you have different principles than Sean Duffy? Do you differ on issues, your approach to issues?
I think it's going to be more approach and our methodology and our values that'll take us down totally different paths, even though a lot of times you'll look and say, well, maybe we're on the same side of an issue. It's how we deal with those and what we believe in our backgrounds.
Well, can you be more specific?
I'm more aggressive in holding to the Constitution and the fundamental principles. You had Sean on the other day, and he kind of explained that, gave that light a little bit when you dealt with the situation of abortion. You know, he right away mentioned going to the courts and going to the states. More of a sidestepping where, for me, the issues are more clear-cut, and you need to deal with them. We need to bring this nation back to its place. I'm going to do less negotiating and plea deals behind the scenes. I would be more aggressive in trying to bring the points home.
You just mentioned abortion. Where do you stand on the issue?
I'm 100% pro-life. I was supposed to be an aborted fetus. So I'm fairly prejudiced in that territory on that, and I'm strong on that. But I believe that's a constitutional issue, and I believe it deals with the rights of life, liberty, you know, that we have based on the Constitution. And it's the same philosophy or belief that I would hold if somebody were going to try to, let's say, eliminate Norwegians, and or they wanted to take, you know, the black nation and assassinate or get rid of them. I would fight those under the same premise.
Now the presupposition of your premise is that a fetus, even from the moment of conception, is a living human being.
It's a person.
With constitutional rights. There are a lot of people and a lot of religious people who disagree with you, who would say that is not a living human being, just say a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks after
right.
conception. So I'll ask you the same question I asked Sean Duffy. Why are you willing to impose your private religious beliefs on the entire nation?
I guess, Glenn, what I'm doing is I'm telling you where I'm going and what I'm going to do, and I'm clear. And the only way my private beliefs will be put on you is if the people elect me. I'm not going in secretive. I'm telling you where I stand and what I hold on to. And if the people vote for me and put me in, then that's a clear sign I need to take a stand for those principles. I believe there are other options in all those scenarios you mentioned that don't require the intentional killing of that child. And I'm opposed to that, and I will fight for that, and I will stand up for that. And it is a Congress issue. It isn't for the courts. And to say that the states should vote whether or not to do that is the same principle that would say then the states have a right to vote whether or not to exterminate a race of people. They don't have that right.
Some would say it's more clear-cut that a race of living adults are human beings as opposed to a just-conceived fetus.
But let's
leave the issue. You've been very clear with your point of view, and you've certainly been forthright about it, and I don't think anybody has any doubts about where you stand.
I am one.
There have been some published reports that some of your supporters feel there are influential Republicans who are trying to squeeze you out in this race and are throwing their influence behind Duffy. Is that true?
Well, you know, politics is dirty. Face it. We have to accept it. Whether it be on the Democrat side, whether it be on the Republican side, it gets dirty. People are passionate. They're going to fight. They're going to use any angle they can. I'm under a lot of fire right now, and I understand that. You know, I'm going after Dave Obey. I'm doing this to Dave Obey. I'm chewing on him. You know, so how can I find fault if Sean wants to nip at my heels? It's a situation where that happens. Yes, people have been very concerned about the fact that there seems to be inequitableness in how things are treated. But I'm sure Dave Obey feels that way sometimes when he's not on a talk show and somebody else is there.
Now, let me just refer to one published report. It's in the Metro Brief section of City Pages today by Pat Peckham, and it mentions a rally that's being held, a healthcare rally tonight featuring John Stossel of the ABC network, and it's sponsored by Americans for Prosperity. And according to this, your opponent, Sean Duffy, was invited to appear, and you were not. Is that evidence that influential Republicans are trying to squeeze you out?
Well, there had to be some reason why I was not invited, whatever that may be and how we determine that. You know, I expect to face more of that. You can run a campaign in two different ways. Number one, you can get out there and debate head-to-head and deal with the issues. Or you can try to undermine one candidate over the other and use whatever avenues you have. I'm more the type that's out in front. I believe in, you know, face-to-face confrontation, dealing with the issues, and doing that.
Did you contact the Americans for Prosperity people and say, hey, I'm a Republican, I'm running against Dave Obey, this is a health care forum, I want to be up there? Did you do that?
I tried. I wrote a number of emails.
What happened?
Didn't get no response at first. I did finally call the Washington office, and shortly after that I got a call and an explanation afterwards why it was. By that time, it was determined that they were going to not invite and uninvite Sean as well. Rather than having us both there, they chose rather to uninvite him. And that's their right. That's their choice. You know, I have to admit, I felt a little bit shocked when I was not included in that. But that's what politics is all about. If I can't handle that type of stuff here, I shouldn't be in Washington because it's going to get much worse.
Were you asked to take some sort of a pledge by Republicans not to attack Mr. Duffy before the primary?
You're talking about the ultimatum? Yes, not a pledge. What it was is I was sent an ultimatum, so was Mr. Duffy, signed by 16 chairs without authorization from their local groups. And it was an ultimatum that you don't say anything bad about each other. You can say whatever you want about Dave Obie. I was told that verbally, but you don't say anything bad about each other. And we want a clean campaign type idea. And if you don't, we're going to basically pull the plug on you. And I did not abide like that. I refused to agree to it. I originally said I would sign it if they would define what they call dirty politics. And then they immediately said, well, you don't have to sign it. It's an ultimatum. And so that's right.
There's one thing to be told not to engage in dirty politics. There's another thing to be told not to critique your opponent.
Well, see, that my concern is, what do they call dirty? If I find a difference and we talk about it, is that dirty politics? And I, again, I'm a constitutional believer. I believe in freedom. If I have the right to say something about Dave Obie, I should have the right to say something about a fellow Republican. I believe in equity. And I wouldn't want to be treated any differently by other people as well. What's fair for the goose is good, should be fair for the gander type idea. And I have a real problem on both sides of the aisle when you try to show favoritism to somebody and not to the other. We're all in this country together.
Are you worried that if there are divisions in the party concerning this primary race, that this could come back to haunt either you or Mr. Duffy come November of next year?
Do you remember the last presidential race between Hillary and Bill? Did it get dirty?
Hillary and Obama, you mean?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Hillary and Obama. I forgot about him. Surprising, huh? it got dirty. And guess what? They're both together working for the cause. Sometimes that works to an advantage because you get a whole lot more press when there's something to write about.
We're talking to Dan Mielke, one of two Republican candidates challenging Dave Obie, who is currently serving his 40th year in Congress. We want to hear from you. Do you like Dan Mielke's stand on the issues? Do you prefer Sean Duffy? Or do you think Dave Obie should be returned for yet another term? This is your program, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Our lines are open right now, so if you call right now, you can get right in. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg with you on the Ideas Network.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Our guest today, Republican Dan Mielke, one of two candidates running against Dave Obie. Our phone numbers, if you want to get in, we've got open lines right now. If you've got opinions about any of the issues facing the 7th Congressional District or the United States of America, for that matter, if you've got opinions on the health care debate, on the forums that have been going on, about the stimulus bill, about the decision to prosecute or to investigate the CIA regarding interrogation procedures, those are all on the table. 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Tell us about, Dan, about the Tea Party event that you're participating in this weekend in downtown Wausau.
Well, there's actually two. There's one on Saturday and there's one on Sunday. The first one is the typical type Tea Party that you probably have heard about or seen going across the state, with one exception. A major exception. This Tea Party is not funded or put on by any organization. It's for the people, of the people, and by the people. It has an open mic. No one has been refused to speak that wanted to speak. Everybody has been invited. We went overboard to try to do that. We want the thing to be totally open. So there's no, we're tired of someone, some group or some organization always trying to orchestrate straight and direct the sheep of the United States and into another pasture.
Okay,
we want
enough.
Our voice.
And on Sunday?
Sunday is going to be more spiritually oriented. It's going to be designed on the concept of putting God back in the nation. As you know, our coins say, "In God we trust," and many of us believe that that should remain that way. And we're dealing with that, and we'll be dealing with some of the moral issues that are often not talked about in a lot of the Tea Parties and other political issues.
Do you have any speakers who have confirmed that you'd like to share with us right now?
Oh, there's a lot, and I'll probably forget some. I know we've got, Pro-Life America, Pro-Life Wisconsin's coming, Peggy, and we have you know, people that are running for Congress are coming to speak. People that are running for the Senate are coming to speak. On the Constitution Party side, there's a couple of speakers for that. We have people dealing with family issues, parental rights issues are coming, mm-hmm. speakers from Green Bay. We have quite a few. We have a couple that have canceled, but we have probably 13 to 14 speakers, so it's going to be a busy event.
Now, a number of Democrats, including Dave Obey, contend that the Tea Parties, and especially the raucous protests at the health care forums, are orchestrated by lobbyists for the insurance industry and by rich Republican interests. And in the case of the town halls, the people who attend them and disrupt them by shouting other people down are un-American thugs. Now, those aren't my words. I'm going to play a brief clip of the conversation we had with Dave Obey 3 weeks ago. Are these protests a sign that opinion is turning against national health care reform?
No. What they're a sign of is that lobbyists on K Street are financing a coordinated national operation to try to turn this debate into chaos. There are two organizations. We have copies of both of their memos. And what they say is, come in early, spread around the room, get the front seats, and don't wait for the question period to begin. Begin to shout out. Have others begin to shout out. It's an instruction sheet in how to bring chaos to any public discussion. In my view, it's thuggery. It's disgraceful. Despite the fact that the public in the last election expressed a strong yearning for people to get together and find common ground, despite that fact, you have a tiny cadre of hardcore right-wing activists who are willing to destroy the process on a daily basis in order to get their way and embarrass their opposition.
Tiny cadre of hardcore right-wing activists, and it's thuggery. Dan Mielke, your response.
It's politics, I guess. When you're the one being screamed at, it's organized, and when you're the one screaming, you're just a grassroots organization. This Tea Party, we didn't get any money from anybody. I know firsthand. They're coming. There is no organizational structure behind it. I can attest to that. There's always going to be people trying to motivate people to go to things and to do something to make a point. And there's always going to be people that are going there that are there for themselves. And it's very hard for you to organize people to come to an event and do this thuggery unless those people stand behind what you believe in. And so I really question that. I don't buy that. There may be a case or two where an organization is trying to orchestrate something like that. But if they don't have the membership that supports them anymore, they're not going to be there. And so I guess I disagree. People are speaking up. Where was the thuggery the last few years?
Well, what about having people shouting other people down, screaming, not letting other people talk, interrupting them? I mean, shouldn't we behave in public the way our mothers wanted us to behave? Don't we have just kind of a Christian obligation to behave that way vis-a-vis other people?
Do you remember the old Norman Rockwell picture where the guy's at a town hall meeting and speaking, and you got the other people in the picture shaking their heads or whatever? That's what America's all about, is people speaking out. And some are going to scream. Some are going to try to communicate. If you think you're going to control the masses, you got another thing coming. I'm sure there'll be people at this Tea Party on the other side screaming. We had them at the last one. Doing the same thing. It's just people are expressing themselves and they're doing the best they can, and we have to learn to work with that. If I'm going to alienate myself just because people scream at me, I shouldn't be in Washington. And Dave Obey should allow that and should be there rather than walking away or avoiding it, because how else are you going to communicate with them? I don't have a problem going up to thugs, if you want to call them thugs, and trying to communicate with them. That's what America is all about.
It's hard to communicate with somebody if they're shouting you down.
It is, but it's impossible if you don't come. We have to try. You can set a better example by going and you behaving than not showing up at all.
Now, Mr. Obey is holding a town hall forum by telephone on Monday. He's been criticized by Sean Duffy for not doing one of these in person. What's your take on that?
Well, I don't have a lot of confidence in the town hall meeting where you have give and take on 50,000 calls. It's going to be kind of hard for him to accomplish that, and it's going to be very hard for people to see who's asking the questions, whether they're orchestrated or not. I was at an event in Polk County where Dave Obey did speak to the people, and there were people there that spoke out, and there were people that listened. I was one of the ones in the front row. I enjoyed listening to what he had to say because I needed to get that information so I can deal with him in a campaign. We had a good discussion. There's good and bad in everything, and we have to learn to work with that.
I'm going to ask you another question that I asked Sean Duffy. Mr. Obey has been in office for a long time. He's got a lot of power, and as chair of the House Appropriations Committee, he brings back the bacon to this district. I'll just run through a few projects. Repairs to the Apostle Island lighthouses, sewer and water infrastructure for Rhinelander, funding for the Rhinelander Airport, the new Highway 5129 interchange in Wausau, the Arts Block project in downtown Wausau, a medical science building that has his name on it at North Central Technical College, and this Friday, just a block from here, the dedication of a $6 million building here at UW-Marathon County, which will house a theater, the offices for the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Research, and here's a disclaimer for you, brand new studios for Wisconsin Public Radio.
Wow.
Now, if you get elected, you'll be a freshman, you'll be a Republican in a Democratic administration, you won't be able to bring back anything for anybody.
You know, Glenn, to give you money like he's doing prior to an election, running around and giving out these handouts to try to gain votes, which I believe what it is, it's not his money. It's yours. Before he gives it to you, he has to take it out of your pocket.
Well, the idea is he's taking it out of the pockets of everyone right around the country, and it's coming back in a disproportionate share to this district, helping construction workers, helping the contractors, helping all of the people who are putting up these buildings and these highways.
We're dealing with a health care bill right now, and they want to take control of that. And one of the things that I'm frustrated with is the American people, pledge to take care of
All right, hold it right there. Okay. I got a break coming up. We're going to talk health care in full when we come back. We've got Dan Mielke with us, 261-6371, 1-800-780-9742. Route 51 returns after this.
Did you know that many WPR programs are archived so you can listen later at WPR.org? When you'd like to listen to a program again, or you want to tune in when it's convenient for you, visit WPR.org and click on Audio Archives.
We are back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network with Republican Dan Mielke, one of two candidates running against Dave Obey, longtime Democratic incumbent congressman for the 7th Congressional District. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our phone lines are starting to fill up, so we're going to get to some phone calls right now. If you'd like to join the conversation, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Let's go first to David in Ironwood, Michigan. David, you're on Route 51.
Yes, I have a different view about the abortion issue. I consider life from the beginning, but I also consider the mother aiding that life into the world. If they're going to force a mother to aid in life, why not force me to mail 10, 15 bucks to save a life in Africa? And heck, his mother, a year, 9 months, maybe that should be 50,000. Of course, then you have to raise a kid 8 years, maybe it's 100,000. So where do you draw the line? You know, especially early on, mothers do die in childbirth. We should do whatever possible to encourage mothers to carry the kid full term and give them medical aid so they could have these kids.
Dan, it sounds like this is a libertarian argument in favor of keeping the government out of this issue and letting mothers make the decision.
Well, keep in mind, my mother was supposed to die when I was in her womb. She had to make that choice. I was the baby that was supposed to cause the life of my mother, and I'm prejudiced. I guess I'll have to say it. I think I have a right to life just as much as she does. And when she went and got pregnant, there's a responsibility that goes with that. And she made the choice, and I'm proud of her for doing that. I'm glad I'm here. I guess the situation, what you're saying, is we need to be considerate of both, and I agree with that. But there are other options than taking a baby from a mother who's probably can't deliver to full term and putting that baby in an incubator versus taking it and destroying it. And I have a problem with that.
David, do you have a quick follow-up?
Oh, well, there was this Project Life in Minneapolis. They did everything. They put mothers in safe houses. They helped find child care. If the mother wanted to keep the baby, they did everything to help them.
So you're saying there are ways to do this without the government outlawing abortion? And that's a libertarian argument. You're a conservative, Dan. You're supposed to be in favor of limited government. We ought to get the government out of these areas.
There's ways to stop slavery without us killing all the black people, too.
Right.
And there's a proper way and a wrong way. And I believe that the Constitution and our inalienable rights gives the right to protection of life, and that does not have an option for people to decide on.
2616371 or 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to John in Rudolph. John, you're on Route 51.
Oh, Dan. Dan, I'm wondering if you know about, do you propose or do you oppose or support the fair tax law?
Well, he's got a fair tax button on as he's sitting here, so I think I can answer that yes or no, but we'll let him expound on it.
I'm a very strong supporter of the fair tax. Personally, that is the only viable solution we have right now available, and it's a consumption-based tax. It takes away all the inequities and all the tax breaks and loopholes that are out there. It does away with a huge system called the IRS, and it makes it fair across the board. There's a reason they call it the fair tax, because it is fair. To have a consumption-based tax, what happens then is you only pay that tax when you're consuming new products, and you're not being taxed when you can't afford to pay. And it's based on a lot more equitable system. It deals a lot better in solving the problem with industry and business. It'll bring jobs back to America based on that alone, because it takes that burden off the shoulders of a lot of our jobs.
The progressive income tax is something that was really a Wisconsin idea. It was something that was proposed by Fighting Bob La Follette back at the turn of the century. And it was a Republican idea. Teddy Roosevelt favored the income tax because he thought rich people should pay and pay a disproportionate share of their income to keep this country going, because they benefited primarily from it.
What's sad is taxes tie very closely to political power. And when you start to disproportionately tax people, and you start to give some people breaks and other people's, you start to control the voting public, and you start to mess up the government itself. I'd rather see a fair tax system so that politicians don't give breaks to the largest number of voting people and then oppress other people. It's not just about the rich and the poor. It's about industry. It's about business. It's about all of our lives. If we're going to have the right to vote, then we also should be treated equitably, and that's where the problem is.
You know, Dan, back in the 50s, under a great Republican president, Dwight David Eisenhower, the top marginal income tax rate was 90%. We still generated a lot of millionaires. We built the interstate highway system. We rebuilt Europe in the Marshall Plan after the Second World War, and we began the process of putting a man on the moon. And an income tax with a 90% marginal rate, and people are complaining about 38% now?
People always complain, but a fair tax is the only way to go. Fairness, equitableness, treat everybody the same, and maybe we'll get our country back. But when you give 60% of the people tax breaks, make the other 5% pay, how do you think those votes are going to turn out in the elections?
We're going to go back to the phones. Jane in Stevens Point, you're on Route 51. Hello, Jane.
Hi. I am calling. Hello, Dan.
Hi.
I'm calling because I'm actually in the exact same situation as you are in regards to being, my mother was supposed to die because of her pregnancy with me, but actually she did die, which is why I am pro-choice, because it gave her the dignity to be able to make her own decisions.
I have a lot of friends that have been in that same situation. Yeah, if you understand that these are individuals, you know there's only one option. A lot of people on the left have fought for years for freedoms for people and to protect their rights. We just want to include everybody in that, and that includes the unborn.
Jane, thanks so much for the phone call. Do you have a quick follow-up? I really don't want to spend the rest of the program on abortion.
That's fine, and I say as a woman, I think I have many options, and I should be able to have those protected. So that's all. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, Jane. Let's talk about something that Mr. Obie is very proud of, and that's the stimulus package that he helped write as the chair of the House Appropriations Committee. And we asked him 3 weeks ago whether or not he thought it was working, and this is what he said.
I think that it's doing what it's supposed to do.
Texas Republican Senator John Cornyn just this week called the stimulus package a failure. He noted that unemployment continues to go up and will probably hit 10%. Cornyn said President Obama and the Democratic leadership promised no more than 8% unemployment.
That's absolute nonsense.
That's what he said.
Well, that isn't the first time that what Senator Cornyn has said is absolute nonsense. So he's just being consistent. Let's give him credit for that. If you go back and look at what I said at the time, I expected unemployment to go well above 10%. The question was whether it would go even higher than that.
It would go well above 10% even if the stimulus package
yes.
was passed.
I told people that I thought that the package, if anything, would undershoot the mark in terms of what was necessary. And the fact is that when people are out of work and when the Federal Reserve has shot its last bullet, when interest rates are already at record lows, when the housing sector isn't going to lead you out of the recession like it normally does, when the auto industry isn't going to lead you out of recession like it normally does, the only bullet left in your gun is government investment. For people like Senator Cornyn, and the Republican leadership in the Congress in general to squawk about what we're doing, it's like the crowd that ran the car into the ditch now squawking about the way that the recovery crew is trying to pull a car out of the ditch. They don't have a really good track record in terms of running this economy.
You Republicans ran the car into the ditch, Dan Mielke, and now you're keeping the paramedics from helping the people in the car.
Actually, what we're doing is, you're right, some of the Republicans ran the car into the ditch, and Dave Obey's trying to bury it over with a bunch of cow manure or other type. I do not agree with him. The stimulus package is not the solution. You don't borrow money you don't have and spend it and then say that's going to do it. What you're doing is you're taking from our grandchildren and trying to fix the problem today. And even if it works, you are stealing from our grandchildren, and they won't have that option. We had a recent situation where he was really proud of his $5 million for some lighthouses refurbishing up north. That $5 million went to just three lighthouses. I called on those lighthouses. That won't be spent for 3 to 4 years yet. It's not going to help the stimulus system. And what they said, I said, is it structurally, because I was an old building contractor, I said, are the buildings in structural problems? No, they just need a little tuck pointing and some remodeling. We want to turn one into a tourist attraction. $5 million. At the same time, Doyle wanted to charge Murphy Oil another $2 million in taxes when they're hardly making any money the way it is and shut down 350 jobs that were potentially going to be there. Why didn't Dave Obey give Doyle $2 million, fix those that so we could have our 350 jobs, and I think you'd have more people living around and they can look at the lighthouse that doesn't quite have it refurbished?
6 months ago, many economists thought we were on the brink of a second Great Depression, and we read horror stories, 25% unemployment, bread lines, businesses all across the country going bankrupt, nobody being able to get credit for anything, banks failing. That hasn't happened. Nobel Prize-winning economist Paul Krugman, this is a question I asked Sean Duffy, credits Dave Obey's stimulus package and the leadership of President Obama of averting a second Great Depression. We appear to be coming out of the recession right now. Now, if that's true, Dan, you shouldn't be running against Dave Obey. You should be building monuments for him.
Well, I love the word that you said, if, because I don't believe that is true. What's really kind of funny is, you know, it's like the old you know, salesman type idea saying he's going to cause rain, and he runs around and screams and screams and screams until the first rainstorm comes and says, I did it. Sooner or later, something's going to work. I don't believe the stimulus is working. Most of it hasn't even been spent yet. This running around and giving people money is, and what's really interesting, most of that's designed to come out next year, just prior to the election. Sure, that's going to help his votes, won't it?
Dan Mielke, Republican candidate for Congress, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Our lines are open. We've got another 13 minutes of Route 51 if you want to get in line and ask Dan a question.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Our guest, Republican candidate for Congress, Dan Mielke. Our phone number is 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Dan, I'm going to ask you a question that you might not be prepared to talk about, but I'm going to ask it anyway because it's all over the news. Your thoughts on the death of Ted Kennedy?
As you know, I would probably oppose most of what Ted Kennedy has done in politics, but as you understand, I have a real strong passion for life. I have a strong passion for people. I do not see my opposition as someone that I would hate or want, you know, harm to come to. He lost his life, and it's sad, whoever that is. And I guess I'm you know, he gave a lot of his time to do what he believed in, and I think we should respect that. And you know, as an old warrior once looked at another fellow warrior on the other side that died, he took his hat off to the man. He was ready to kill him, but when he died, he respected him for the battles that he fought. And Ted Kennedy has done a lot in this country for what he believed in. And although I disagree, I don't believe I should rejoice over his death.
One of the things he really believed in was national health care, universal health care. There are plans now to rename the health care legislation the Edward M. Kennedy Memorial Health Care Bill. And Democratic strategist Howard Dean, himself a doctor, says Kennedy's death is going to stiffen the spines of Democrats and get them to pass that legislation.
How sad it is that you have to take a person's death and try to turn it into another political move. Ted Kennedy has passed away. He's died. Respect him. Don't use him. I'm opposed to the health care bill as it is. But, you know, there's another solution that we have to look at. We should solve the problems. We should not just pass it on to another system. We need to deal with the problems at hand, and that is the high cost of health care. And what they're doing right now will not change that. It'll just shift who's paying for it.
There are, by some estimates, 46 million Americans who don't have medical insurance. What are we going to do to cover them? Don't you think we have a moral, a Christian obligation to cover these people?
First of all, those people that you're talking about, there must be a reason they don't have health insurance. It may be like me, one that can't afford it. But that isn't a situation and a justification to destroy everybody else's health care.
What about children who aren't covered? What about people
I would like you to show me one child in the United States that isn't covered by health care if they want
to
be.
Well,
we
they
have programs in place.
They have to go to an emergency room, don't they?
If you have an emergency, where do you normally go?
That's
what about Badger Care? What about all the other state programs? They're in existence. Nobody goes without care if they really need it. They may have bills afterwards, but they don't go without it.
There are people who cannot get coverage at any cost because of pre-existing conditions. Is that something you think we need to
address?
That's
where I believe we need to go. We have, as you understand, I'm for fairness, I'm for equitableness, I'm for the Constitution. I have a real struggle where a company that has 3,000 employees gets a better rate than a company that has 200 employees, or somebody has to be locked into a company because the insurance rate goes with the company. My understanding of what I would like to see done is have insurance go back to the individual where they pay the bill. Let the companies pay the employees more money instead of the insurance premium, so when they leave, they can go to another place anywhere that insurance goes with them. And there should only be one fee, one group rate, for each policy type system. It shouldn't be favoritism and progressive, like you do progressive taxes. We got progressive insurance. Some people get a break, some don't. Change the laws, make it more constitutionally correct, where everybody pays fairly.
But, Dan, you'll never get insurance companies to voluntarily cover pre-existing conditions. They'll go out of business. It's like if I wreck my car and I go to an auto insurance company and say, hey, I just totaled my car. Can I take out an insurance policy now, and can you replace my car for me? That's how medical insurance people look at pre-existing conditions. They'll never do it because they don't want to pay. They don't want to pay for an open heart surgery or diabetes treatment or all of the things that are known realities.
I'm not advocating that the insurance companies make the rules. I'm advocating that Congress uphold the Constitution, and that there is no prejudice, that everybody's treated the same. And if somebody wants to do business in insurance, here's your group. It's called the United States of America. Set a fee. Take it into consideration. And that's your fee for that rate. If you want a different policy, offer different benefits, there's one rate. I don't have to be black or white to get a different rate. I don't have to be old or young. I should have that right to go and buy that policy.
But
and
I'm,
take
I'm
that
saying
into
that people with pre-existing conditions cannot get insurance at any cost whatsoever.
And I'm saying if the law was enforced, the Constitution was enforced, if that insurance company does not want to set a rate for all Americans, including the people you're talking about, then they don't need to be in business.
Okay, Dan Mielke, 261-6371, 1-800-780-9742. Let's go back to the phones. Alan Hayward, you're on Route 51. Hello, Al.
Yes, I just find it interesting that Dan talks about the free market working number one, for health insurance, and he claims not to have any himself. Secondly, I've got a friend that lives not too far from Dan, and there's some real inequities. Dan was an assessor down there. His property, my friend's property, was compatible to his and was taxed at a rate four times higher when Dan was the assessor. I don't know. Is that how the free market works? Another thing, Dan has also had a history of getting handouts from the federal government, whether he wants to admit it or not. Take, for example, Dan, when you were picking up deer. And the decomposing animals were in your yard. The DNR had to come in and do the cleanup and line the animals. That was another handout, Dan, that I don't get. But
Al, you've just made a series of charges, and I'm down to my last 5 minutes. I'm going to give Dan Mielke a chance to respond to them. Dan?
First of all the charges are inaccurate. I did pick up deer for the county. I contracted out for that. No DNR came in and cleaned up anything. Nobody did anything. It was all based on contract, and I was paid for services rendered. And I was paid for 50% of what was agreed because they gave me false numbers on the number of kill. There was no DNR involved in that. In regards to the situation of the taxes, when I was a tax assessor, I intentionally inflated my house and my property by 30% so nobody could accuse me of falsely taxing myself. They will go down this year with a new assessor. Everything was treated according to the law, but when people see their taxes go up, they get upset. When people have prejudices, they get mad, and they create these things and spread the rumors, and pretty soon people start to believe them. It's not true.
I want to get your take on one more item in the news. Attorney General Eric Holder on Monday announcing that he's going to launch an investigation into whether the Central Intelligence Agency did anything wrong in the way they interrogated prisoners. What do you think of the investigation, and what do you think of the allegations that some of those interrogation techniques amounted to torture?
Maybe what we need to do is start waterboarding Congress to get them to tell the truth, and maybe do some of that, because for me to try to make a judgment on that by just watching and listening to news or hearing what's going on, I'm working on a slanted piece of information. I would have a hard time to tell you which way to go on that. I do believe that we have a constitution in place that guarantees us rights for liberty, freedom for every person that's in the United States. And that's where we have to stay with that. I was opposed to the Patriot Act because it took away some of our rights and our freedoms. I'm opposed to the fact that an American citizen could be put into a camp because they're considered a terrorist and lose those American rights. I'm not for that. As far as torture goes, you and I, we can sit and talk about that waterboarding all we want.
Well, somebody got waterboarded 170 times, and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. 170 times?
Some of us that were in high school probably got it that much, too, when we got our head stuck in the toilet and flush it. You know, there's a lot of that that goes on. I don't have all the details. For me to try to do that, it would be unwise.
Do you think it makes sense for the government to be investigating it?
Kind of like the pot calling the kettle black. I guess I'd like to see what's going. Is this a political feud again between two sides, or are they literally trying to solve the problems? And I guess that's what we have to look at. There's so much propaganda out there. I don't know how to take care of that. I don't believe in persecuting Americans at all or torturing them. I'm opposed to that. On the same light, I know for a fact that torture and illegal activity goes on in the government all the time, and especially in Congress. They disobey the Constitution they swore to uphold. The problem is, how do we get a system in place?
What do you mean torture goes on all the time?
I firmly believe that whether we have this issue of waterboarding rectified or not, the CIA, the government does things that they don't tell the public. We've seen it happen over the years with when secret documents come out. We've heard about assassination attempts of other countries.
But
we're meddling.
Dan,
we get in trouble.
You're a conservative. You
yes.
believe in limited government. The government should not have the power to torture people, even our enemies. If you believe in limited government, how can you believe that the government should have the power to do something like that?
First of all, you didn't hear me. I don't believe the government should have the power. But I also am a realist, and I realize those things go on, and that's why I'm running for Congress, because I believe it's a responsibility to put normal people into Congress, not lawyers, not people who try to twist and look for loopholes so they can do the things that they want. I understand that, and I understand those things happen. Waterboarding, I don't fully understand that, and I wouldn't know if that's considered real torture or not like I said, I probably got waterboarded in school as a young little whippersnapper many, many times, and those teachers didn't seem to give two hoots about whether I was waterboarded or not.
Dan Mielke, candidate for Congress, and again, he'll be speaking at a Tea Party event this Saturday and Sunday in downtown Wausau. Dan, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you, sir.
I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air and online producer, Scott Clark. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. A reminder, you can communicate with us now on Twitter and Facebook. Next week, Route 51 looks at Labor Day and the history and current status of the labor movement in Wisconsin. Among our guests, historian James Lawrence, professor emeritus at UW-Marathon County. And while I've got some time, I'm going to tell you how to access us on Twitter and Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/Route51Show. If you're on Facebook, put Route 51 in the search bar, then click on our fan page, or you can simply go to facebook.com/Route51Show. That's it. Thanks again for riding with us today. Hope you enjoyed the candidate profiles we've done this month. Until next week, we are heading out of town.